You're listening to The Big Show with George Russick and Matty Rose on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Well, part of that was right. You're listening to The Big Show. No Russick or Rose today. It is Peter Klein, Brent Cron, and GVP with you all as we are into our number two. Connor and Simon in the other room doing a fine job so far for being, I would suggest, probably thrown to the wolves. If we are all thrown together, I would say the producing room is just like, go. So they're doing a fine job so far.
They're killing it.
Yeah. Great job.
Right?
Good work.
You know, it's like, you know, when
I feel like I'm in a Ford commercial with this song playing right now.
I know.
It's built Ford tough.
I know. Yeah. And then, like, this rock.
Big iron grate.
Yeah.
Slams on the ground.
Yeah. Yes.
Buy this if you're a man, right?
Yeah. This song, this bed is way too manly for me to then start talking. Yeah.
You know, I
need to put a set of longhorns on my Chevy Aveo.
Exactly, right? You just instantly grow a mustache and start wearing a cowboy hat when you hear this, right? It's like start strolling into the bar.
People call me Tex, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know how eight guys named Walker just came in here, but that's what we have.
It's great branding. It's a big demographic here. It works really well. I always wanted to be one myself.
Yeah, I am. We don't have to go too far down that road, but I am not that type of a guy at all. Almost the antithesis of it. This is The Big Show for MortgagesToGo.ca. Always the lowest interest rate in Canada since 2004. Visit MortgagesToGo.ca. I figured, as you are the goalie expert, expert on a lot of things, like just life expert in general, but the expertise of your goaltending. At high levels that I have never reached. Dustin Wolf last night, some phenomenal saves. A couple that, as Wilsey said in the one clip there, probably would like to have back. My first question, we know defense was optional last night. How much can we take away from nights like last night and stretches like this at the end of the year for someone like a Dustin Wolf?
Well, the positive is he stuck with it, right? You can get down on yourself too and not give up, but get rattled. You know, especially letting two early goals in to an Arizona team that's, you know, they beat Edmonton, they beat Vancouver, right? They're not playing for anything. They're loosey goosey. They actually have a lot of skill on that team too, which has caught me a little off guard.
But the Flames too.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, you're letting that first one. Yeah, that's a bad goal. Second one, nothing you can do about it. And you can spiral a tad, especially being young and new in the league. But if there's one thing that this kid has, it's confidence. You can see him, you know, even after he makes a save, they're down 2-0 and it's a routine save. He snaps that puck back up with his glove. He's got little mannerisms that show that, you know, he's confident, right? And I was borderline cocky, not in a bad way, but you want to see a guy like that have confidence. And, you know, he didn't look out of place, makes another save. He's not trying too hard.
Yeah.
He's not chasing the game, right? And a lot of times, I know speaking from experience, My first ever preseason game against Vancouver, I mean, it was the first two shots were goals. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was scrambling, jumping around, kind of trapped in my head, ended up finishing the game. It was okay. Lost 3-2. But the stuff that goes through between your ears, you know, when that stuff happens.
Yeah.
But he's, no matter what you're feeling like on the inside, you can't let that show on the outside, especially in the position that Wolf plays, right?
You have to be cool as a cucumber, as the kids say.
Or calm as a cucumber, as some of us say. And so I was impressed with that, right? And his teammates see that he's not rattled.
Yeah.
He goes out, he executes some plays behind the net where he's playing the puck to his defenseman. You can hear him communicating out there. Didn't look like it took away from his game at all.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you get into five goals and you haven't had the lead, and every time you try to get some momentum, you get close, but you can't tie it up, and they come back down. And there was a lot of lateral plays last night where even if you're Jacob Markstrom or whoever right now,
right.
I mean, that's a tough save to make. So last night, the positive I can take out is he stuck with it. The Flames allowed, they got him some run support. And, you know, he made that last save that, you know, didn't let the game get out of hand or, you know, and the Flames just hung around in that River hockey game. So
yeah.
I was happy to see that Friday night against Anaheim. I thought he was really, really sharp for the first two periods, right?
Yep.
On a back-to-back night. So, I mean, he has the demeanor, I see, the mentality, the strength, because he's battled his whole career too, right? Just battling the odds. Battling what people say about him.
Yeah.
You know, he's too small, can't do this, can't do that, he won't make it. So you know he's a motivated guy. You know he's confident, and he also understands his weaknesses. So last night, you know, I thought it was a good battle game for him, like Huska said. We'll just, you know, we're happy we won. You know, glad that one's over type thing. And in those types of games, you're happy to be on the winning side, right?
Yeah. And like, it is weird to say, like, well, he didn't allow that sixth one, and that was a big key, but it was, right? And I think the team getting back into it kind of helped things too, that they kind of picked him up. And as you mentioned, like, you don't want to go away and excuse away five goals. That first one was rough. And even if it was deflected, he was covering more of the back of the net than the front of it. And like, that is something that, at least from my kind of amateur view, he would need to kind of tighten up a little bit. But after that, it was like an NHL video game where it's just one timer. Like, that has to be a little rough when defense was not necessarily the top priority for that Flames team.
Well, and what I liked about it too, I mean, albeit he's a rookie, so he's not going to do this, but he's not embarrassing his defensemen either, or his forwards, right?
Right.
If it is a two-on-one, if it is a backdoor one-timer, you know, a lot of goaltenders, when they're frustrated, you can see who they're frustrated at. I mean, Mike Smith is a prime example.
I was
right?
going to say that,
he's one of those guys that would just laser beams at, you know, oh, I went off that guy's shin pad. Oh, that guy should have back-checked. Oh, that guy screened me. Like, you knew whose fault it was. And you can lose your teammates that way, too, where guys don't want to fight for you if you're going to continually embarrass them like that. So I thought Wolf did a great job of keeping his composure. When the game seemed like it was getting out of hand, he would just go back. He would get up, go back to his net, take a sip of water, skate around, and carry on, right? So, I mean, that is super important to just get the trust of your teammates, because they're not doing it on purpose either, right? Yes,
right.
You know, they're making some mistakes. They're gambling. It's costing them. But, you know, in a circumstance like this where the games don't really mean that much, for Wolf to be able to stick through it, I thought was really good. Now, you know, with that first goal he let in, it was a bad goal, but, you know, Ingram washed that out with that fifth goal, where that Coffey scored, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, he let in a bad goal at the end of the night. You don't want to see that go in, but Ingram did the exact same thing at a worse time when Flames were trying to gain momentum. So it worked out, but those aren't games that you really want to hang your hat on. And some of the best games I've ever played, or you talk to goalies where, you know, they've had their best warm-up, they felt the best, have sometimes played their worst game, or statistically looked like the worst game, right? Where it's just everything's going in, backdoor one-timers, off guys' skates. So all in all, you know, Wolf got a lot of run support this weekend.
Yep.
You know, he let in three goals in the third period of Friday night's game, three goals in the first period of Sunday night's game against Arizona. So that's six goals in a short period of time. But, you know, Flames were able to win both games, and I thought he was solid. The big thing for me, though, for Wolf moving forward is, yes, he can make tremendous saves. Yes, you know, he's very athletic. He needs to cover a lot of ground, right, where you look at guys. I'll go back to Markstrom or even Vladar, big bodies that play deeper in their net. And Mike Vernon alluded to it on Friday, just talking about the how Markstrom's game has evolved in this season, of him finding some calm in the net, right? He's not out as far. He's not chasing the puck as much.
Yeah.
Wolf doesn't have that luxury, right? He can't sit back and wait for plays. He has to challenge, because there is a lot of room. And we see on goals, he does let it in the first period. On Friday against Anaheim, that short side shot, I don't know if anybody remembers that one, where it was towards the end of the first period, right-handed shot comes down, beats Wolf short side on the glove side, but hits the post, bounces back out. He makes a tremendous recovery save where he slides across and the puck shoots low and his pad comes low. Like, that's a great save, but, you know, you got to make sure before that gets there that that's one that you want to just catch with your glove or stop or smother. And it's going to happen throughout the course of the year. And I'm not nitpicking. I'm just saying, to make your job easier throughout your career, right? So you want to eliminate those second chances. And so for me, what I'm really watching for with Wolf, it's not the saves he's making, it's the goals he's letting in, right? And my whole career, any goalie will tell you this, you know, you get ripped on for letting in minor league goals, right? And I don't think that Wolf let in a lot of American League goals when he played in the American Hockey League, right?
Yeah.
But you get up to that National Hockey League level, and I've seen a few American League goals go in on him, right?
Right.
And that's all about him figuring it out, right? And it's a perfect scenario for him right now, where the Flames don't need to win games right now. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, it's, yes, we'd all like to win, but it doesn't matter in the standings, doesn't matter in playoffs. So Wolf can go out and figure this out, right? And he's had a pretty, I mean, how many games has he played for the Flames this year? I think I got it. He's got played in 16 games this year. He's got a 3.3 goals against average and an .891 save percentage. Not great numbers, but, you know, you look at Vladar, .362, .882, and then Markstrom, .275, .906. So, you know, it's been a different year for the Flames. They've given up a lot of scoring chances.
Yep.
We've seen that. But for me, with Wolf moving forward, he's got to eliminate those small goalie goals, which is tough because he's a smaller goalie.
Right.
And the American League goals, right, which is kind of go hand in hand, where, you know, it's a fine line between fighting for space with traffic because guys are bigger. They're faster in the National Hockey League. They're obviously way better hockey players.
Yeah.
And so there's the IQ is higher too, right? And for him to figure that out, You know, it's a good position to him for him to be in, and I'm sure he's probably going to Markstrom too. He's going to the goalie coaches and
yep.
and chatting with them, right? Because he's a kid that's driven, he's motivated, he's competitive, and wants to be the best at everything. And you know, his last two seasons in junior was the best player. You know, first two seasons in the American Hockey League, most valuable player, right? Like
yep.
he's done all he can do, and now. To get here, and now we got to see what he can do with the opportunity he has.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the goals that he's allowing, like you said, these ones weren't going in on him at the AHL level, and that's why I think he needs to stay here at the NHL level. Not that they're going to send him down with two games left, but going into next year, like he is, I feel like he has learned everything he's going to learn from the AHL. If this is a video game, he has beat that boss, right? He has moved on from that level, and now it's figuring out what to do at the NHL level. Like, I just think the flaws that he has aren't necessarily going to be worked out in the AHL, right? Like, it has to be at NHL speed with NHL bodies and NHL shots that he has to get accustomed to and figure out what he's doing with.
100%. And, you know, the last part of this season, you know, that he's been a part of here now, it's just good for him to work on his game, to get yep. used to the NHL, to get used to the travel, to get used to, you know, game days, to, you know, back-to-backs. It's different. The American League, you play, you know, three games in 2.5 days, and you play five games in 7 nights, and you're yep. going, you're playing here. You know, you play a game almost every other night, and then you get a couple nights off, and you play back-to-back. But the importance of winning is just magnified a ton. You know, you go to the American Hockey League, yes, winning is important, but it's development.
Yeah.
Right, it's a development league, and so winning, yes, great. You want to have him have success. He's had success at the American Hockey League level. He's only short of winning, you know, a Calder Cup down there, right? But he's done everything but that, and
yeah.
that doesn't make him any less if he doesn't win it. It's just nice to have on your resume. But nobody cares if you carve out a great National Hockey League career. Oh well, that guy, he didn't win a Calder Cup, so
right.
obviously he hasn't done it all, right? Like nobody
yeah.
cares.
Yeah.
So for him, he's done working at his craft in the American Hockey League. Next season is huge for him, right? He'll
yeah.
have a new contract. They'll have to figure that out, because I think he's an unrestricted free agent this summer, if I'm not mistaken. So they can't even send him down if they want to, right?
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, Vladar having hip surgery, coming back. He's under contract. Markstrom's under contract.
And who knows what happens with Markstrom? Like, next year, Wolf could be a guy that's playing 40 games in the National Hockey
League. Right. And 40 meaningful games.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's totally different, because even though, you know, he's got all the motivation to make his mark, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
Right? You get to figure it out. He's developed some chemistry with his defense pairings, playing the puck early on when he go and play the puck. It was different because it's a different style from Markstrom. They have to get used to him, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, he's a good teammate. He works hard. But next season is going to be obviously the big key indicator for him, right? Where they're going to expect something of him. Right now they don't expect
yeah.
anything from him, right? They want him to do well, they want him to have success. He's got his first home win, he's got his first road win, he's played 16 games this season on a team that's had a lot of controversy around it, and he's been able to come in and learn shooters and been exposed, right? There's players that have exposed him and plays that have exposed him, and
yeah,
you know, you learn as you go with watching a ton of video. But like I said, next season coming into training camp, you know, he's got to be ready to go, and that's where the judgment starts to come in.
And I think what they do with the goalies this offseason is really fascinating. Wolf is an RFA at the end of the season, by the way.
Oh, okay.
But,
yeah.
Either way, he's going to be with the big club next year,
yeah.
I think. Now, I thought that was, I was saying that going into this offseason too, and I was proven very, very wrong. But they do have three NHL goalies, and we've seen teams carry three. I would be surprised if they do that. On the one end, I think having a Jacob Markstrom to kind of be the adult in the room with Wolf and guide him along would be great. But I think Jacob Markstrom, he of 34 years old and probably wanting a nice little bit of jewelry at some point in his career, may not exactly be thrilled with that role. So I think it's really interesting to see what do they do specifically with Markstrom, but really with whoever is riding shotgun with Wolf next year.
Yeah, you know, and the Flames had the luxury too of starting. Yeah, and I meant to say he was a restricted free agent, not unrestricted, but
yeah,
but they didn't have to make any decision. As much as people, you know, we wanted to see Wolf up here all season long, you know, they didn't have to do it. The gun wasn't to the back of their head. They had power,
yep.
right? And so you have Markstrom, you have Vladar, and the worry is obviously bringing goalies on too young too, right? Throwing them to the wolves and
totally.
Ruining their confidence. I mean, the Oilers did that with Dubnyk early on in his career,
mm-hmm.
right? Up the road, where he was a highly touted young goaltender, and he couldn't get any confidence because the team just wasn't very good,
yeah.
right? And then he leaves and finds success elsewhere. And you know, it's all timing and opportunity. And I really do hope it works out for Dustin Wolf. But, you know, this summer, I mean, I don't think Markstrom's going to be around. I don't.
Yeah.
Right. They're not going to have three goaltenders. That's just not, that's not a recipe for success. It's not having three goalies on the ice for practice. It sucks. I've been there. I've been the third, and it's and it still sucks. You know what I mean? You're not happy to be there. It's you get bagged after practice, and you know you feel like a part of the team, but it's revolving door. In today's you know salary cap era and contract status, I get why teams do it, but it's a tough spot to be in, right?
Yeah.
So, to your point about Markstrom, he's been in this league a long time. He's he was the Flames' best player until the trade deadline, right?
Yeah.
And you know now it's you can kind of see the writing on the wall. Vladar, you know he'll recover from his hip surgery. He'll be at training camp next year, you think? And it and it might be Vladar and Wolf to start the season. I mean, I don't have any inside information, even though I classify myself as an insider every once in a while. I got no inside information. However, that's the way she's going to go. And so the judgment starts on Wolf next season. Right now, he's working off credit. He's working off the credit he's built, being a highly touted prospect in junior and now the American League.
Yeah.
But once you become an NHLer, the gloves kind of come off with everybody, where it's okay. You know, now it's he's going to be 23 or 24 next
23,
year.
23,
23. So he's still young.
Yes.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we've known him forever, and he's 26 and 27, and he's about to walk into his spotlight, right? But he's going to get his first real opportunity to have an impact on this club starting next season.
Yeah, and it's such an important piece when you're looking at rebuilds and retools, right? Because it's like Buffalo has been trying to figure that out for a decade. Ottawa, same thing. Detroit, same thing. It's such a big part of the next chapter for the Flames.
And goaltending is such a huge part of it too. If you can have strong goaltending during a rebuild, it mitigates some of those big losses and those big blowouts, right?
Yeah.
But if everybody's learning all at once, from your forward group to your D-core to your net miners, as Matty Rose likes to say, he says net miners like 700 times a show, drives me nuts. I like the word, but not 700 times.
Yeah, it's a nice throw-in every once in a while. Yeah, it's not a go-to.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like me. It's the fill-in, but every day it starts to wear on you a little bit.
It does. It grinds my gears.
Yes.
So as we move forward, though, I mean, if he can, you know, be... create some stability back there.
Yeah.
Right. You know, he may not have the run support next year, depending on how things go. Right. But who knows? But like I said, he's done all he can do. He's living off of credit right now, mm-hmm. where he's getting an opportunity. He doesn't have a great game. Let's in a bad goal. We'll stick with you. You know, let's in two early goals last night. They're going to I firmly believe if he were letting four in the first period, he'd still be in the game. You know what I mean?
Like, he's not getting pulled.
No, you just work your way through that, right? But next year, when games are on the line, points matter, you're fighting for a playoff spot, your leash isn't as long, and you don't have that credit built up with the coach at the National Hockey League level. So there's lots at stake.
Text here at 960-960. Kron is a rock star. Sign him up to a daily gig. I met him on the weekend when he was a guest alumni during my girls' junior Flames hockey practice. Nicest guy and alumni member. My girls were so happy to have met him, and me too. Smiley face. Thanks, Brent, for making time to chat. It meant the world to us. Heart emoji, Kelly.
Oh, that was great. I remember meeting her. She was awesome. Nice. We had a little chat on the bench. You know, I was doing one drill where I was teaching kids how to do a face-off. And,
your expertise.
And I don't know if the kids knew that I was a goalie or not. I tried to explain it to them, but I'm like, this is what you got to do. You got to get your stick in here. You know, and I had the pucks in my jersey. I had it scooped up like a kangaroo pouch, you know, and I'm telling them where to go at the face. And I felt like such a fraud and a phony, right? But the parents there were great. Kelly was awesome. Came and chatted hockey for a little while and had lots to say. And her girls were tremendous. Good attitude. Had fun. They were smiling out there, right? It's always great to see... kids out there too, especially at that age. It was U9, U11.
Yeah.
And it's just smiling, having a good time. You're messing around with them. There was a little kid out there. He was about three apples tall. He was just an absolute workhorse too. He was ripping around, trying to slash the stick out of my hands and poking me in the skates. You know, he was cruising for a bruising, but I had to go off for a line change. So he dodged a bullet there. But you know, the alumni do a tremendous job in this city. This Junior Flames program goes on for months and months.
Yeah.
A lot of volunteer hours, a lot of coaches, parents that get involved, and it's it's a lot of hockey, but it's a very simple brand, and you know, you just teach it, and the most important thing is you're learning and you're having fun, and it was a pleasure to be a part of.
Nice.
Thank you, Kelly.
Love to hear stuff like that. All right, time for us to take a break. When we come back, there's some kind of golf tournament. As the Masters wound down yesterday, Scottie Scheffler, his second green jacket in 3 years. We'll talk about his dominance and everyone else's lack thereof when we come back here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're listening to The Big Show with George Russick and Matty Rose on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour two, The Big Show rolls on here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. No Russick nor Rose today. Peter Klein, GVP, and Brent Cron with you. Very happy to be joined now from the Fan 590 Morning Show and the Golf Guys Podcast. It is Brent Gunning. Brent, how are you today, sir?
Doing well, boys. How are we?
Doing well, doing well. It's another Masters in the books. We got the
started.
Oh, sorry.
Before
go ahead.
We get started, I just have to say, and sorry to hijack your show here. I know Russick pretty well. A sick day after Masters Sunday is just a little too convenient for me. I got to be honest.
Yeah, I did think, like, I got a text on late Sunday, like, oh yeah, it's out right now. Maybe not going to be able to come in. It's like, I'm not gonna draw conclusions. I know the guy works really, really hard, but. Yeah, we're just saying.
For you. I'll draw them for you. Yeah.
Okay, so the Masters, it's the sign that we are through the winter out here in Calgary anyway, and it is just this wonderful bit of spring, the music, all of it. And now we're starting to become accustomed to, oh, and Scottie Scheffler is going to win. He gets his second in 3 years, fourth youngest golfer to get to two. I guess, what were your thoughts on Scottie Scheffler kind of dominating as we came down the end there?
Yeah, that was, everyone's been drawing the, you know, no one's calling him Tiger Woods, but a lot of people are drawing the comparisons that this is the most dominant stretch we have seen since peak Tiger, and it kind of felt like that a little bit. He wasn't doing a lot that was spectacular. He was doing what he needed to do, taking advantage of the lead he had clawed back. But it was a lot of guys falling away by the wayside and him just continuing to stay steady. And that was what jumped out to me. You know, the other thing is Scheffler is, he can be a little boring at times. There's not a ton to kind of grab onto, and I don't know if other people felt the same way, but that was one that kind of pushed me over. I enjoyed watching him be dominant. Even though there wasn't much drama, I was wanting him to kind of pile it on and add more to the lead. So, yeah, it felt like a stamping home of everything we already thought about Scottie Scheffler is what I'd say.
Since Tiger's like real run of dominance came to a close, we've had a few kind of challenge for the crown. For a minute, it was Rory. Dustin Johnson had his moment. Jordan Spieth looked unstoppable for a bit. Brooks Koepka at majors was unbelievable for a while. Is there something about Scottie Scheffler's game and how he approaches things that makes you think that he can kind of sustain this where others kind of started to falter?
Well, I think the hardest thing about staying there is the desire to stay there, quite frankly. I mean, all these guys, yeah, they play for money, but they've that's all taken care of, especially if you're one of those guys who took the live money. But it's the ability to stay there. You know, I was looking at the consecutive weeks that Tiger Woods had at number one, and Scottie's not approaching anything like that. But you just look at the results he has, his floor seems so much higher than everyone else's. You know, he's not Tiger Woods in the fact of never missing a cut, but just look at his last results. It's a win. It's a win. It's a second place. It's a win again. And yeah, he will cool off at some point in time. But in listening to the interviews with him afterwards, you know, everyone has different beliefs and everything, but I really do think his faith and his belief in God allows him to just play so easy and free and, you know, whatever it is for any athlete, but for anybody in your life, like if you're able to just go do your job or do the thing you care about most to the best of your ability and then let it go and say, if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. I can't relate. I worry and stress and contort myself into a million different, you know, what ifs. he seems to just have this belief that it'll work out or it won't. And yeah, it's easy to do that when you've got the money in the bank he does and a couple of majors already. But that's the thing that does believe me or does lead me to believe that it can continue longer than the somewhat fleeting kind of flashes in the pan we've seen, like from those guys you mentioned.
Yeah, I'm with you that the mentality of golfers is wild. Like, while you're answering, I'm sitting back thinking of last segment, wondering where I screwed up. And like, these guys, and I'm just a film guy, doesn't matter what I do. But these guys, like, they go out, at, like, missed a putt on Friday, and oh, I just missed out on $750,000 by one stroke. Oh, well, on to next week. I can't imagine doing that in my brain at all.
Yeah, most guys can. I think that's what makes Scotty special. I mean, if Rory McIlroy had a lobotomy one of these weeks walking into Augusta, I'm pretty certain he'd win. The way he hits the ball, the course is set up so well for him, but the brain, it just gets in the way. I mean, it's impossible for him to not think about the meltdown he had in, I think it was 2011 or whatever it was 100 years ago now. But even if he's not consciously thinking about it, it's lingering there. And then, you know, you think of somebody like Koepka, who's such a fiery competitor. Well, he can't sit here and pretend he doesn't care and he doesn't, you know, really work himself into knots about these majors anyways. So, yeah, it does feel like Scotty has the you know, I the guy I do my podcast with out here, Sam McKee, we joke that he has the best golf brain because he doesn't have one. He just swings, gives it a whack, go finds it, and hits it again. And I think Scotty's got a bit of that to him. I mean, obviously, he's thinking about his shots and focusing, but he does just seem to have this ability to just let it go once it's happened. And I think that's kind of his superpower. You know, in a world where we think of Bryson and Rory hitting these 350-yard drives, or, you know, we think of a guy like Mickelson still as having the best hands in the world, Scheffler, there's no one skill of his that stands out. I mean, he's an exceptional ball striker, but all these guys are. It's just his ability to kind of be at ease in the biggest of moments that's what lets him stand out and what makes me think this can continue.
Well, and we saw a lot of examples to the contrary over the weekend because everything was crumbling around him. We know the conditions were a little bit rough at various points weather-wise throughout the weekend, but we only have, I think it was 11 golfers at par or better for finishing the tournament. The leaderboard looks more like a U.S. Open than a Masters. So I guess this is a long-winded way of saying, what happened to everyone else?
Yeah, I think Augusta won. Every once in a while, it'll do that. You know, when you have a big change in weather, even at a place like Augusta, it can be hard for them to dial the course exactly the way they would like. Now, they're going to come as close as anybody is capable of, but when you have a big swing in it and it's a tournament that prides itself on having those kind of crispy brown greens by the end, that you're going to see that, just what an incredibly tough test it is. I also think, you know, I don't have the numbers to back this up, but the field feels a lot younger than it has. We just know how much experience kind of matters. You know, there are some players who maybe it doesn't matter as much for. You've seen Spieth, you've seen Scheffler come in and have tons of success early on in their Masters career. But I think that led to it a little bit as well, of just tough conditions. And I honestly love it. You know, I wouldn't want the Masters every year to look like that, but the idea of the cream truly rising to the crop at what is supposed to be the pinnacle of golf, I loved it.
Chatting with Brent Gunning from the Fan 590 Morning Show and the Golf Guys podcast here on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. I'm Peter Klein. That is GVP.
Hey, Brent, you kind of mentioned some of the youth around golf right now, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on Ludvig Åberg. He finished solo second at the Masters this year in his majors debut. How impressed were you with his game over the weekend?
I'd say impressed, but not overly surprised. You know, this is a guy who kind of burst onto the scene last year. I won't bore you guys with the details, but basically, if you're really good at golf in college, there is a very quick on-ramp for you to the PGA Tour. He was able to get some starts, won in, I think, his third tournament. That was enough to get him on to the Ryder Cup team. I was able to see him play at the RBC Canadian Open when it was out here last year, and two things jumped out to me. I mean, the game of his stands out in a massive way, but the respect he had immediately from all of the guys who would eventually become his Ryder Cup teammates. It was Tommy Fleetwood and Matthew Fitzpatrick shepherding him around for his practice round, and he looked to be giving them just as much advice as they were giving him. He really just seems to be part of the club. This guy is a special player, and winning is hard. Winning majors is hard. I'm not going to sit here and promise any of that for him. But the fact that he was able to do that in his first major, you know, having a Ryder Cup under your belt before you have a major, it's a pretty weird thing. I think that probably helped him a ton with the, I won't even say the nerves, but just the feeling of how, pardon the pun, major this week was. But yeah, he is a young stud in the game of golf. He is a guy that is quickly going to kind of vault himself into the conversation. And you know, it's not a problem for him. I'm sure he'd say he wants to go do this, but the thing that has been set out for him is that young guys win now. You know, Colin Morikawa, the guy who also choked it away yesterday, mm-hmm. he has two major championships already under his belt. So he's not going to be able to go too much longer. And, you know, I mean by that a couple of years here, but by year three, he's going to have, I think, some major hardware to kind of stay in that club, or we're going to kind of quickly put him in the club of best golfer without a major, which is a wild thing to say about a kid who's going to be 25, 26 at that point in time. But we expect greatness from young golfers now. It's not a nice to have. If you are truly elite, you got to get it done pretty early. So I think it's awesome that he gets to come in and he's put himself on the map. But I think it's even better that there's real stakes for his early major career here.
On the flip side of things, do you feel like this weekend exposed any of the LIV golfers at all? Last year, the top 10 looked really full of their guys. They had a better showing. This year, you can't really say the same. Even the defending champ, John Rahm, had a tough weekend. Do you think this is a trend we're going to continue to see with some of these LIV guys that get exemptions into the majors and whatnot?
Yeah, I've been pretty adamant that the loss of competitive muscle memory was going to be something that was going to do these guys in. I don't think it will always do them in, and I don't think it'll be one rule for all LIV golfers. But you mentioned Rahm. I mean, I saw a sit-down interview he did. Well, I mean, I'm sure he did it early in the week. I saw it Thursday of the Masters, and he looks broken. He seemed to really... I don't know if it was being back around his PGA Tour peers. I don't know if it was the fact of being at Augusta, but the weight of the lack of import of the tournaments that he mostly seemed to really hit him. And I think a guy in Rahm, he needs those competitive juices to kind of be at his absolute best. On the flip side, I mean, Bryson DeChambeau has been lost in the wilderness, and he injected himself back into this. I think we will see a guy who's on LIV win a major sometime in the next 2 years. But I think more often than not, you are going to see their guys falter. But I also think they just have too many talented players that they're going to have a few guys in the mix. I mean, I know they had nobody in the top five, but Bryson, Cam Smith, both in the top 10. And Cam Smith is a classic guy who I thought would have kind of completely fallen off in majors. Just because, I thought he would have needed that competitive fire to kind of keep him intrigued in being a great golfer. Apparently I've been wrong, because he's been pretty good at majors since. So I think it's going to hurt the majority of them. I also think a lot of the guys they took were on the longer side of things. I mean, no one expects Dustin Johnson to win a major anymore. Same goes for Sergio. Phil had a super surprising second place finish at the Masters last year, but I don't think anybody's holding their breath on any of those coming. So for the younger players, I think they still have a chance. But yeah, more often than not, I think it's going to be a pretty PGA Tour heavy leaderboard. But I also expect a LIV guy to kind of rip one off every now and then. And God, what a week in golf that'll be.
The product that is men's golf right now has been a major topic, as it is super divided. Do you think the way that is set up hurts kind of the prestige of these majors? I know that golfers are going to be able to make more money and all that. They already make plenty enough. But do you think the division right now kind of hurts the prestige of these majors going forward?
I think it helps the prestige of the majors, but it hurts the week to week on the PGA Tour. Because, you know, we look at the majors and we look at what Scottie did and all the guys he beat. You know, I may have my questions about him, but it feels a lot more special when you're beating a field that has John Rahm and Brooks Koepka and Cameron Smith and Bryson DeChambeau in it than it does when it's you know, Aaron Eckroat, who won a couple weeks ago, and we're all sitting here going, who? Exactly. So I think the fact that when it gets together, golf just feels a lot more like tennis now than it ever did. You know, the two sports are more similar than they are different, and it felt like for a long time that golf had the week-to-week going for it more, where you would see interest in a, you know, a non-major tournament, but I really feel like that's waned. You know, the RBC Heritage this week, it's an elevated event. I don't know how special it's going to feel, especially coming off the back of the Masters. Now, the Masters did feel more special because DeChambeau was there and Rahm was there. So I actually think it helps the majors, but I think it hurts the week-to-week product of the tour.
That's fair. Wanted to ask you about a couple players here. We'll start with Rory McIlroy. Tough weekend for him. Yeah. You got to think eventually your gut would tell you that eventually he'll find a way to win at Augusta, but those chances are getting smaller and smaller every year. Gut feeling, do you think Rory has what it takes to win at Augusta?
Now, I have to tell you something about me personally before I can answer this question. Okay. I'm a big Rory guy from all the time, and I'm a bit of a pessimist. I don't really think good things are going to happen. So I think you know where I'm going with this. No, I'd love to sit here and tell you he's going to have his magic moment, but it feels like that's what it's going to have to be. It feels like it'll have to be a Tiger in 2019 or a Jack in 86, but those guys had already won Masters before. It feels to me like if Rory ever wins this thing, he's going to have a special Sunday where he starts four shots back and then shoots a 63 and nobody can catch the number he posted. I'd love to tell you it's going to happen, but I'm waning to think it's going to happen, to think it's in the cards, to be honest.
Also got to talk about Tiger Woods here. He returns to pro golf this weekend. What did you make of his week? Do you feel a bit better about him going forward, knowing that he just wasn't simply forced to withdraw this time around? Or was this kind of a showing that maybe he really can't hang anymore?
He can't hang anymore, but it did make me feel better about it. I know those things shouldn't be, go hand in hand, but they do. I thought this was going to be a really, really rough week for Tiger. I thought making the cut was going to be in question, and it was for a minute. The body was able to bounce back. He gave us a couple of moments. He had a chip in on Friday or on Saturday that got my text groups going. He had a couple of birdie putts early on the Thursday round. I think that's what he is. He would never say it, but he's a Masters ceremonial golfer. He is somebody that comes out and, you know, if he can just be Fred Couples in at the Masters, where he, you know, has an odd Saturday morning run, or he makes the cut again next year, I think that's what he is. Don't you dare tell him that. I think he still thinks in his heart of hearts he can compete or at least have a run. I think that's done, but honestly, this weekend was so much more of a positive than I expected it to be from his standpoint.
Can we just get him a cart, please? Like, I think he can still swing it just fine. It's crazy that just the walking part is what's kind of doing the greatest player of all time in, right?
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, there was a guy famously, I think he's like the Oregon golf coach now, Casey Martin. He actually sued the PGA Tour to try to get use cart because he has a, I don't know, it's like a back or spine issue or something. And shocker, they said no. I don't know. I feel like Tiger might have a little better luck, but you and me both know Tiger would rather die than ride. I feel like he even hates riding in those like charity matches they do with the tricked up carts. I think even then, if he had his druthers, he'd want to walk just to prove how tough he is.
A couple more here with Brent Gunning. I do want to shift gears to the hockey team in your market right now. I know they don't get talked about a lot, but Matthews with a very nice season. He is one goal away from 70. The Leafs have two games left and objectively absolutely nothing to play for. Do we see Matthews in games 81 and 82, or do they rest their star for the playoffs?
I think you're going to see him in one more game. This is a big topic of discussion on my morning show this morning, of which of those two games. The one tomorrow is against the Panthers that they'll probably play in the first round again, with my belief that everything that can go wrong will. I worry about a win being committed in that game against Austin Matthews. So it's up to me. I wouldn't play him in that one. I think you have to give him one more shot to do it at least. It means so much to the fan base. It means so much, more importantly, though, you'd never hear it from Matthews but it means a lot to the guys on that team that have played with them this year, be it a Marner, be it a Domi, be it a Bertuzzi. You hear, I'd say, two nights a week in postgame from those guys of how special it is to play with him and how bad they want that. I think Sheldon Cate played him 25 minutes. It's the most time he's played in the game since February. He wanted that. He wanted him to get it so he could sit him down. I think we see him for one more of these two games. I think we probably see him tomorrow night. If it were up to me, I'd give him the last game of the season to do it, but I think you have to give him at least one more chance to do it because the team wants it so bad. And not that they'd sulk if you didn't have a chance to do that, but I do think you want the team feeling as good as possible. And if it means playing Austin Matthews in another hockey game, I think it's certainly worth doing it from where I sit.
Brent, it's Brent Cron here. I had to grow up with my old man being a giant Toronto Maple Leafs fan my whole life. I'm 42. I have to listen to the ups and downs of him. It's been a rough go. But my question is in your goal, in your net, your goaltenders there. Samsonov, do you think he's got the tools to do it in the playoffs? He's had an up and down season this year. He's put some wins together lately. He hasn't been that great. What are you guys thinking in Toronto?
Man, this has been a very big time evolving question. If you had asked me a week ago, I'd say it's remarkable how good I feel about the goaltending. Mm-hmm. Samsonov's had a couple of rough outings, got lit up in his last two times out. I think you see him one more time, but yeah, it's definitely taken a turn for the worse. This was a guy that was lost in the wilderness, seemed to find it, and the last couple games, he's been doing the old, like, Grant Fuhrer. It's like, okay, we won the game, but you let in four or five. I don't know how much you loved it. But having said that, he was great on Saturday night in the third period when you needed him to be. I think you're as confident as you possibly can be in a tandem that involves a guy in Samsonov and Joe Woll, who's played 40-some-odd NHL games in his career. It's not the absolute Achilles heel it appeared to be at one point in time this season, but they're going to be underdogs in the goaltending ledger, no matter who they play at any point in time in this postseason, I think. So, yeah, a little concerned for sure. I think you have to be.
Brent, awesome stuff, man. Thanks for doing this, and have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. And, yeah, I hope Russick's definitely better from for sure being sick, for sure.
Have a good one, Brent.
Take care, guys. Bye.
Cheers. There is Brent Gunning, again, from the Fan 590 Morning Show and the Golf Guys podcast, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. At least there's no pressure in Toronto.
No
one
zero.
Really talks about the team
right.
A lot.
And Matthews potentially getting 70. That's huge. I feel... I got a soft spot for TJ Brody, you know,
like, yeah,
I do. And I met him a handful of times when he was here in Calgary. The guy gets dumped on a ton. Hey,
mm-hmm. Yes.
It's just never ending. I think cause he might be he's a nice guy, right?
Yeah.
You know, and he doesn't complain. He just goes out there and he's got a stick over his knees. Every time there's a bad play, you know, he dumps the puck in the corner in overtime and then stands there like a pylon.
I don't know if it's his body language or if he just has like resting sad face.
That just makes him a scapegoat. I know. I feel bad carving him, right? Cause he's such a great skater. I compared him and Hanifin together a lot, actually, when Hanifin came over here too.
It's just pretty fair comparison,
right?
I think if you looked at the, you know, the last time the Flames drafted in the top 10, 15-16, that's right around, like, you know, I'm not going to say prime TJ Brody, it's when he was still logging 20 minutes with Giordano. You know, they're putting up like the same stat lines,
right? And so, you know, you just see him. I saw him getting hammered on Twitter, you know, and everywhere. You just see him, even if it's not his fault. If he's on the ice, it's like, oh, well, it's got to be TJ Brody's fault, right? It's just, you feel bad for the guy.
It's all his fault because he is quite talented.
Yeah.
And so he set the bar too high.
He did.
Because you expect things from him now, and that's why I keep it low.
Well, you know, and he's a great skater, but like him and Hanifin both, I've ripped on Hanifin over the years too. I've never been a huge fan of him. He's a steady, like, you know, second pairing D-man in my, which is a good position to be in, but just because of how good of a skater he is and how big he is, you always expect more out of him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, The poor decision making in their own end is very it's flush with TJ and Noah, right? Mm-hmm. Like they both make poor decisions in their own end under pressure. I know it. Yeah, he's under pressure. He's going to make a bad decision, but
yeah.
you you always expect more out of these guys. And Hanifin had a hell of a year this year with Calgary, and he's been rewarded with it down in Las Vegas.
Yeah, he's not getting paid like a number two defenseman or a second pairing defenseman.
Exactly,
anymore.
Right? And then you see Brody's got to go to Toronto and just get beat on every day.
Yeah.
You know, there's he's aged poorly, I think.
Not to mention he's in there with Giordano. And the knock on him here was like, oh, Giordano's just carrying this DJ Brody guy.
And now
out in Toronto, like, Giordano's the hometown guy and all that, and everyone wants to root for a guy who's 40 years old.
Yeah.
And they're still a pairing together, so, you know, he's obviously going to take the flack out of those two guys, right?
I know. He just can't dodge a bullet.
No.
But in saying that, he has put together a pretty good career in the National Hockey
League. Yeah, and he's been, I think, compensated rather fairly for the last decade or so. So I think he's doing okay. This is The Big Show from the DL Basement Systems downtown studio. Worried about radon? We install custom mitigation systems to reduce your risk. To find out more, visit dlbasementsystems.com for a free estimate. That's going to do it for hour number two. Catch it in podcast form wherever you get the Couch Potato Diary podcast. Hour one and hour two are going to be available here in a little bit. In hour number three, it's the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joining us on the other side as we roll on The Big Show here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.